Previously on The Bear Cave.
The National Park Service has warned against sacrificing the other person, even if you think the friendship has run its course.
Please note, this following podcast features bad language right from the fucking start.
And now, recorded live in Southampton, England, you're listening to The Bear Cave and other podcasts.
This is a diary of a nosy little shit.
This week on Goggle Fox, a staggering episode all about walking when drunk.
Fuck My Life, a podcast by Her Majesty the Queen.
Real audio wrestling, the best wrestling promotion that you've never seen.
This is Baz and Dave's hidden cinemagic.
Tune in next week for a much better episode. For now, courage.
Now, here's your host, Al Bear Galpin.
Hello and welcome to the Channel Hopping Multi-Podcast Experience. The show is an amalgamation of ideas from my podcast, other people's podcasts, and the completely made-up podcasts, all thrown into one big melting pot for your oral delight. You're listening to Episode 4 of The Bear Cave and other podcasts. If you'd like to get involved with the show in any way, you can find us online at albear.uk/cave, email us bearcave@albear.uk, leave us a voicemail on anchor.fm/bearcave, and find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Twitch. It's OwlBearUK on all of those. On this week's show, we take a look at the week's weirdest news in the weird week that was with my co-hosts, JP O'Hare, Darren Saunders, and Lloyd Collins. I talk to Stacey Taylor about her podcast, Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour, and she does a mini-episode for us with me as her guest. We hear from my old pal Dr. Squee about his upcoming charity podcast event, and travel 20 years into my past and listen to some classic uni radio work from my personal archive.
I'm Stacey Taylor. I'm the host of too many podcasts that have the name Stacey in their titles. I would like to say off the bat that I'm just not that egotistical, really. It just sort of happened that way. But my main show is Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour, which is a monthly pop culture ramble fest where myself and a guest co-host will come and talk about anything we've seen or read or listened to over the past like few weeks. And I swear like a sailor. How's that for an intro?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty accurate as well. As a long time listener to your show, that's pretty accurate. So where did the show first come from? How did it come about?
Oh, well, I've actually been podcasting for longer than I'd care to admit. I am one of those people who, when people say, oh, have you heard this podcast? It's been out for like 2 years. It's such a new shiny thing, podcasts. And I was like, yeah, 2007, mate, was when my first episode of a podcast came out. But yeah, I started doing a show called Comic Racks, which was a hilarious double entendre because it was a all-female podcast about comics, and we have racks, as do the things that comics are presented on. So we did that for like a few years, which was some of the most fun podcasts I've done. Me and my friend Izz McAuliffe just chatting shit about comics from a female perspective, which was something that at the time there wasn't an awful lot of about anyway.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, after I think it was 4 or 5 years, unfortunately, life sort of got in the way of the podcast, and Izz and I weren't able to keep up a regular schedule. And it sort of got to the point where every month Libsyn would remind us that, you know, you are paying for this feed that you've put nothing on. Did you know that? So eventually we were like, come on, it's time to scrap it, which I thought was going to be like the end of podcasting for me because Izz and her husband were always like the more technically minded and they had more of an idea of how to actually make a podcast. But then I went to Thought Bubble Comic Convention in 2011 and had a very weird moment where somebody recognised my voice from the podcast and told me about how sad she was that I wasn't podcasting anymore. Oh. And of course, my ego grew like 67 times. And I just thought, actually, yeah, why don't I just still do a podcast? So basically, I went out on Facebook and I said, look, I want to do a podcast. I'm not going to get a sort of permanent co-host because as much as I adored recording with Izz, like obviously, you know, there's a lot more issues when you've got one person around scheduling and, you know, if they become, you know, if they don't want to do the show anymore or what have you, if you don't want to do the show anymore, there's like all of a sudden a whole other person's feelings you've got to think about. So I just decided I'm just going to do a show where I get to talk about the stuff that I'm passionate about with like-mindedly, equally passionate, nerdy people. Mm. So I launched the show in February 2012, I want to say, with the idea of it being sort of like a monthly nerd fest, basically. And I haven't actually, she says, touching all of the wood on the table, I haven't missed that many episodes in those like 8 years, mostly because I also decided to do 3 24-hour live shows, which filled up quite a hefty portion when they were chopped down into like editable chunks. So it's been basically just me being passionate about waffling with people about movies and stuff, which I can't do in my normal life because I have a normal job with non-nerdy people. I don't have the kind of job where I can go to work and be like, oh my God, have you seen the latest Iron Man? And everybody's like, have you thought about doing any work, Stace?
That's one of the things I miss about working in an office now, working from home, is just those random conversations with the people next to you. Hey, did you watch this? Don't get that anymore. So that's why another reason for me to come on back on the podcast again, talk to people.
Well, this is the thing about podcasting is that like a lot of people, because I know there's sort of like a huge drive in the industry at the moment to be like monetizing things and, you know, having like the thousands of listeners and stuff. Mm. But to me, like obviously people listening to the show is a good thing. But to me, it's much more about being able to talk to other people.
Yeah.
Because I've never been in a situation really where I've had lots of nerdy friends. I do have a small handful, but in my regular life, like, you know, most of my friends aren't the kind of people who are going to want to talk about the latest issue of, you know, Ms. Marvel or what have you. So for me, it was more of a way of just being able to like get out all the fucking nonsense that's that's just trapped inside me, because I love talking about movies and telly and stuff. So yeah, that was the bigger reason why I did it, to be honest, is because I'm just quite keen on like blathering.
And if you could have anyone come on, I know you have lots of different people from other podcasts and friends and various things and bits and pieces, but if you had any like celeb guests on, who would be your dream person to come on and talk to?
At the moment, it's 100% Ben Schwartz. Like, I've developed a marginal, I wouldn't say obsession, because that sounds creepy, but I just everything he does, I think is really fucking funny and great. And I just think he'd be a really fun person to chat with as well, because I don't know if you ever watch Game Grumps, the YouTube Let's Play channel, but they recently did a couple of episodes with Ben Schwartz, and he was so, like, genuine, but also super funny, and that's sort of the vibe I like to go for with my podcast anyway, is that I don't like it to be you know, we're going to shame you for not knowing every single fact about a particular comic that you happen to review, or, you know, it's not the kind of show where you have to answer like a questionnaire, you know, prove to me you are a geek before you come on this show. It's none of that, because I've got the world's worst memory anyway, so I wouldn't even pass that test and I wouldn't be able to record my own podcast. So I do quite like the idea of it being sort of more conversational, more sort of open and honest and chatty. And I think he'd be an absolutely great one to talk to.
Yeah, I can imagine that being a good one.
Can you imagine? I mean, the amount of geekiness over just Sonic the Hedgehog alone would be quite spectacular, I think.
That would, yeah, I'd listen to that one for sure. Make it happen. Make it happen, please.
Believe me, I am trying. He's a hard man to get hold of.
I wonder, I've listened to, you know, a few different people's podcasts recently and seen their kind of quality of guests go up over the last couple of months, where obviously comedians and things like that aren't really doing much at the minute. They're just agreeing to go on random people's podcasts because they've got nothing else to do. So it's now is the chance. Do it now before while you can.
I know. I don't want to miss my window. I also don't want to be that girl who like stalks him around like 23 different social medias going, hi, do you want to do this thing? Like a total nutter.
And have you got any plans for the podcast? Do you want to keep it going as is, or is there things that you would like to do with it?
To be honest, I'm quite happy to just keep it going as is, because like I say, the point of my show isn't so much like gimmicks or like segments, or I'm not there to bring everybody like the latest geek news or that sort of thing. It is literally just, I have seen some things, I would like to talk about them. Who wants to talk about them with me? Which might explain why I don't get a lot of downloads, to be honest, because it's a very sort of like casual, it's a very casual atmosphere that I think a lot of people possibly don't gel with. But
yeah,
if you enjoy just listening to people, you know, really geeking out over things that they like, or occasionally having massive rants about things that they hate, cough, Joker, cough. yeah, for me, it's more about just like having fun, and I kind of hope that all the listeners have fun as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the main thing for me. So as soon as it stops being fun, maybe that's when I'll change things up, perhaps, I don't know. But at the moment, I'm still just having quite a nice time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's no need. Yeah, if it ain't broke, as they say.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you mentioned there, it's kind of conversational and stuff like that. So we're going to give people a little idea of what the show's about, and we're going to do a little bit kind of off the parlour now. So you talk about different things that you've seen and done recently. So I have got one. If I want to start, because when I actually came on your show, I didn't really have anything to talk about because I was so busy I hadn't watched or done anything in so long. It was pretty poor of me not to be prepared. But I actually have something recently. Do you have Apple TV Plus?
Because
very few
no.
people do.
No.
So it's something on that I've come across recently, because I remembered that I got it for free for 12 months when I got my new phone at the end of last year. And one night after Kitty had gone to bed, I just thought, I'm just going to randomly have a look to see what's on there. And I came across a comedy show called Mythic Quest.
Okay.
Which stars, I forgot his name now, Rob McElhenney, is it, from Always Sunny?
Oh, yes.
And it's him and someone else involved in that as well had written this. And it's set in the world of a company who makes a multiplayer, a role-play game called Mythic Quest. And it's all about kind of the absolute crazy team that they have there and the nut job that runs the place and everything that goes on in that world. And there, you know, the streamer who plays their game the most is like a 12-year-old boy who's an absolute nutter himself. And I just found it incredibly funny. And it's about 8 or 9 episodes, I think they did, pre-lockdown. And then they've done like a special lockdown episode, quarantine episode as well, where they all filmed it from home. So it's like one big Zoom call with all the characters in it that ends in an epic toilet roll, rolling from camera to camera to camera from one person's house to the next, which is really, really funny. I really, really enjoyed it. And I've not seen anything by those guys before. I never really, saw that the first 10 minutes of It's Always Sunny and I didn't like it.
Okay. So I absolutely adore Always Sunny, but I am very aware that it is very much either your cup of tea or it's absolutely not your cup of tea.
Yeah.
I think if you watch an episode of Always Sunny and you're not gelling with it, you're not going to, because that's 100%. You know, all of its episodes are like that. They're all awful people generally doing fairly awful things. I find it wildly hilarious. So I was going to ask if it was anything like Always Sunny, because it's always one of those things where you sort of have this like trepidation around when something you love, like Always Sunny, like people break off and do something else, because you think, okay, so either this is going to be more of the same, which could be good but might be sort of pointless, or it's going to be something entirely different and I'm probably not going to like it.
Yeah. It's like everyone who liked Friends going in to watch Joey. It's like...
Do you know, me and my hubby were actually talking about Friends the other day, because that's become the show that... like, I don't know about everybody else, but during lockdown, I've had a real hard time some days just paying attention to anything, but I want some sort of, like, background noise. So, like, Friends has become that show because always on Comedy Central. That you can just pop it on, and it doesn't matter what episode it is. You'll get a little chuckle out of it. You don't really have to pay that much attention because it's not, like, you know, deep and,
yeah, you know,
it's just silly.
Yeah.
But I have never once seen an episode of Joey, and I don't think I ever will.
I wouldn't.
Who wanted it? Who wanted Joey? I just don't understand.
I think the network execs wanted it in the hope that they would get at least half the audience of Friends and get some money out of it. But yeah. But no, I don't know if this compares to It's Always Sunny, but there are a lot of arsehole characters in it doing bad things. Okay. So it might well be the same, and it might be that I just caught Always Sunny on what was a bad day for me, and I just didn't get on with it that day. But there's something about the world this is set in, and there's a couple of characters in it that I really like. There's the girl who is head of the design team. It's a girl, Australian. The character's name is Poppy Lee. And I just find her particularly hilarious. And she's kind of become, for me, the star of the show. It seems to all resolve around her more and more as the episodes go on. Yeah. And it did something quite unexpected for me. It took a turn in about episode four or five. It was midway through the run of what they've released. It did release an episode that appeared to be completely unrelated to anything else.
Oh.
It was a flashback to the 90s involving no characters from the show, about a couple who met in a video game store, who both went on about how they didn't like anything that was on the store, on the shelves, and were like, oh, well, maybe we should make something. And it was a story of them going off and making a game and future generations, and then the movies made of it and all this kind of stuff, until eventually they break up. They become a couple, then a partnership, and then they break up and all of this sort of stuff. And the only link to the main series that I can see is the office that they rent out, or they buy to make their game, is the office that the whole Mythic Quest is based in. But that it only becomes evident quite later on in the series. So I have no idea what it was there for. But it was good. It's just I've never seen a show do that.
Yeah.
Go out of its setting, jump back 30 years and tell a completely different story, but in the same universe with completely different characters, and then jump straight back into the main story again afterwards.
Yeah, that's really bizarre.
It was quite odd. Took me by surprise. Like, I kept waiting for like someone to come in that I recognised as a kid, or you know, some link to the main show. But
yeah, or like this was somebody's parents or something.
And I never know. They might come back. They might weave it in later. But as it stands, it didn't link in any way. And I found that really unusual, but kind of fascinating at the same time.
Yeah. See, I would be pouring all over that episode. I'd be watching it like a thousand times, trying to figure out, right, why is this here? There's got to be something.
there were a couple of links. One was like the guys who were trying to sell their game. They sell it to a game studio, and it turns out it's the same studio that bought Mythic Quest when the guy goes in to pitch that, which is tagged on right at the end. So that seems to be the only link that I could see.
Yeah.
But I just found it really fascinating. So if you ever end up getting, you know, a new Apple device and they throw in 12 months worth of Apple Plus, it's worth checking out. I don't know whether it's worth the subscription price on its own. There's not a huge amount for me.
We're subscribed to so many streaming services. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, there's 100% no way I'm watching this unless we get a free.
Yeah, exactly.
A free subscription.
And we watched something else on it today as well. That's kind of a kids' cartoon based on a book that my little boy's got. Yeah. So we'll give that a try. But it's the only time we've ever watched anything on there.
We're at the moment, we're right in the middle of, well, I say in the middle, we're actually right at the start of a Simpsons rewatch.
Nice.
Because Disney Plus exists. So now this is what we do now. We don't watch new things. We just watch old things that we like that make us feel nostalgic for times when we can, you know, be outside.
Yeah,
it's weird. I'm really intrigued by Mythic Quest because it's one of those things where, what's the sense of humour like in it? Because for me, Always Sunny is one of those shows that its sense of humour is that you should be able to make a joke about anything. So it 100% goes for all of the things that people might be offended by, which is why I understand why a lot of people don't like it, because I'm of the mindset of I think you should be able to joke about anything. I actually think laughing about some situations is a way of having power over them and not letting them rule you.
Yeah.
But similarly, the jokes have to be funny. You can't just say shocking shit and expect people to go, yeah, that's acceptable. Like, it has to actually be genuinely funny. And for me, that's where Always Sunny it toes that line where it's always like, oh, it's so close to just being offensive, but there's always that like edge. So I wonder about Mythical Quest, about whether it's maybe a bit more sanitized or a bit less, potentially.
I think it does get close to the line on a few occasions from what I can remember. There's some great characters in it. There's the guy who is the office manager, who's clearly not in charge, because the creative director is the one who's running the show. And he hires an assistant who clearly has no respect for him and doesn't like him, and is constantly trying to, oh, should I go and work with, you know, the creative director? Should I go and work with him? Should I go and do that? Because she really likes him. She just wants to work for him, but she's got the wrong job really for her. And she is constantly kind of bringing down her boss. And like any time that he needs backing up on anything, she's like, nope, I'm on the other guy's side. And stuff like that's quite funny. And then there's one where there's a woman brings in a group of young girls into the office to her, and they're like, oh, we want to show you what it's like to be a woman working in video games. And I guess, yeah, sure. Do you have lots of women working here? Yeah, of course. And then he turns around and there's a whole room full of men. And he's like, maybe not on this floor. And he keeps going from place to place. And like the three women who do work there, and are the main ones in the stories, are all not there for various reasons. And he's just going around trying to say how great it is. And then they finally find one, and she is just like, it's crap, it's shit, don't work here. Because she's the most miserable woman. And it's great. But yeah, so there are other instances that escape my mind straight away. But yeah, there are a few times I'm like, ooh. but yeah, it is always funny. And Danny Pudi's in it as well. From Community.
Like,
yeah. And he's the guy who's in charge of like making the money. So he at one point, you know, like in these games, you can pay real money to buy upgrades and stuff.
Yeah.
He, for a laugh, creates this magical sword that does something, and he's put it on there for $250,000. And he presses it to go live, and it's like, oh, you know, it's the unattainable. People will go for it. And as he's talking, there's a ping in the background, and someone's bought it within a few minutes of it going live. He's like, what? It's like some Saudi prince who's just got bought this sword in the game.
Imagine having money to wang on in-game purchasing.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. $250,000, absolutely insane. But yeah, there were some genuine chuckles in there for me throughout. And yeah, if you're able to watch it, it's one I would recommend to people.
Oh, excellent. I am, on a comedy note, have you seen Middle Ditch and Schwartz? Not to bang Ben Schwartz's drum yet again, but
I've only seen the first one.
Okay, thank God, because it just struck me as we were talking about Ben Schwartz earlier that just before we started this call, we were having a little chat and I shouted, I'm loose in it, and 100% didn't equate in my brain that you might not know what that was.
No, I knew what that was, and you're not the only person to have done that to me. Because my mate, you remember Ed, you met at Superpod, he messaged me and said, I'm sure I saw something online that you said that you'd watched Middle Ditch and Schwartz. And I was like, yeah, I have. And I think it's because I replied to you on Twitter, and that's what he'd seen. And so he just replied with, I'm loose! Exactly. And we met him a few days later, and he's like, oh yeah. And he's like, you've only seen the first one, then you won't know what I'm talking about. And I'm like, pretty sure that was in the first episode.
Yeah,
and he's like,
it was. Yeah, all three episodes are great, but that one in particular struck me just for bits like that. And the number of times now that me or the hubby will say something totally unrelated and then go, I'm loose! I'm sure our neighbours think we're insane.
I've got to watch the others at some point. Kitty's really not keen on improv, so it's one of those I watch without her.
Yeah, normally I'm not, to be honest, but I think Middle Ditch and Schwartz are good enough at it that it's... And to be honest, I quite like absurd humour anyway. Like, I'm quite keen on things just sounding silly or... Like, I'll laugh at, like, a very highbrow political joke, but then I'll also laugh when someone farts. Like, that's like...
That's always funny, though, let's be honest.
I don't have a discerning palate when it comes to comedy. But I think... The thing I just love about them pair together is that they're obviously like very much both on the same wavelength and they work so well together.
Yeah.
But that we're going to have to rewatch them anyway, just because they're so great. But my hubby actually had like a weird, funny turn during the third, and the third episode is arguably the most complicated, for want of a better word, without spoiling it. There's a lot of characters, and even they get confused as to who's playing who at any given time. But there's a fantastic bit in that where they're all on the toilet and then Thomas Middleditch goes off on one about people using too much toilet paper. It's like, he did not know how relevant that would become.
Yeah. Speaking of that, that reminds me, the last of the regular episodes of Mythic Quest before quarantine was they introduced a virus into the game.
Yeah.
Which caused people to puke and shit blood everywhere, and it spread by contact. So it was, and the idea was, I can't remember what the idea was, but it was just this massive virus that spread throughout the game. And then she had to program she was like, "Oh, can you just delete it?" And then it's like, "No, let's make it a thing. Let's program in a vaccine." And so it became a whole thing. And I was like, "Was this filmed before?"
Oh God!
Because what are the chances? So that when the quarantine episode begins with a meeting between three of them about, we need to make sure we pull this and we need to wipe this, the timing was horrendous. And I was like, was this planned or was it really just that bad?
Yeah. It's been quite interesting to me, the reaction to that sort of media that some people have had, because a lot of people I know have suddenly watched the movies like Contagion. Yeah. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Contagion and Outbreak were like the top two downloaded movies on iTunes. I'm like, what?
What are you actually doing? Like, this is already a nightmare. You don't need to add extra layers of, oh God, this is terrifying.
Yeah. Whereas I think in China they banned that game, Plague Inc. They banned that, so you couldn't. People were like, oh yeah, let's see how this is going to get bad. Let's play it on the game.
Dear Lord.
Oh, this wonderful world we now live in.
I know, it's exciting.
Isn't it just? That's why we do everything. That's why podcasts are doing so well at the minute, because everything is remote and we can do this remotely. It's fine.
Oh, I know. So many people in my workplace were like, God, how are we going to cope? And we're like, you know, what do I do? How do I computer? And I'm like, come on, guys. I'm that dickhead who shows up to all the work meetings, all the Zoom calls and stuff with like a headset and a microphone and stuff. And everybody else is just like squinting into their laptop, shouting into the shit laptop lights.
Yeah, I've got this mic attached to the desk, so I started using this. And people are like, what have you got there? And I've got my proper headphones and a big mic with a mic cube on it with the logo of the podcast on it and everything. It's just insane. I also started doing, when I was getting bored a few weeks into lockdown, was I've got like a Mexican wrestler mask. So I put that on 1 week and had the background of a wrestling ring behind me. I did one where I wore a Darth Vader helmet and had a background of like a hangar in the Death Star. I think they were getting fed up after a couple of weeks, like, oh, what is he this time?
Oh, yeah, see, I'm just that knob who everybody's like, look at her with her proper setup. I absolutely would never have like an advertisement for my podcast though, because I dread to think what people at work would think of it. They just turn it on and I'm like, cunt, turn that right off.
Joys. So anyway, that gives everyone a little picture of what Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour is all about. I think that sums it up perfectly, doesn't it?
Words. I think so, yeah.
So if people have liked that kind of chat about this kind of subject, where can they find you online, Stace?
Oh, you can find the podcast at popcultureparlour.podbean.com. It's a lot of P's and I'm sorry because I don't have a thingy-majig. What's it called? Pop guard on my mic. I'm really sorry. Or you can find me on Twitter at Stacey's Parlour. Or I imagine I'm on like Apple Podcasts or whatever. I don't know. I don't really pay attention.
You just put it out there into the world.
Yeah, I just put it out there and hope some people listen to it and maybe it makes you smile, because that's all I want to do really, is give people something to smile about.
Yeah. Oh no, I am right now. Thanks to you. Good. So thank you for that. Well, thank you very much for talking to us about your podcast. And everyone, go and check it out.
In a week when our Goggle Voxers listened to a breathtaking show about asthma, we learned a lot from a fascinating podcast all about ladies' formal headwear.
Hi, it's Dr. Squee here. I'm here to tell you about my live video podcast event, Squeefest 2020, brought to you by StreamYard. 2 p.m. to 2 p.m. British Summer Time on 9 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern, I will be going live for 24 hours on the Dr. Squee Show Facebook page and twitch.tv/Dr. Squee to raise money for NHS Charities Together, who are supporting NHS staff and volunteers who are bringing the fight to COVID-19. We will have guest stars including the third Doctor, Doctor Who companion Katie Manning. From Going Live, we have Trevor Simon. Stand-up comedian Anubhav Pal will be bringing Mumbai to the event, and we'll have so many more guest stars to announce. As well as that, we have quizzes, games, panels with authors and ghost hunters. We've also got your favourite podcasts, Retrek, Netheads, Legend in My Spare Time, Due South by Southeast, Unclassical, Dead Piet Society, Talking Codswallop, Diversely Geek, Legend of the Travelling TARDIS, Dog's Best Friend, and Blame Makes Food. As well as all that, our friends over at SW20 Radio, The Sound of South Wales, will be broadcasting an hour of Squeefest with our friend Matt Lees. Please follow our Facebook page and at Dr. Squee on Twitter and Instagram for more guest announcements as we have them. All this and so much more. If you can afford to donate, please go to justgiving.com/Squeefest now or on the day and give what you can. And join me for 24 hours of fun. I'll see you there.
Looking back at the oddest stories of the past 7 days, this is The Weird Week That Was.
The Weird Week That Was.
Before we get to the stories that we're going to discuss, I've got a few little headlines where either the short story is too short or the story is given away in the headline. So these are some other things that happened this week. KFC have said they're going to drop finger licking good. Due to coronavirus and the fact you should not be licking your fingers currently, but say they will bring it back once everything goes back to normal. A Tokyo park has opened see-through public toilets to try and stop dodgy things going on in them. A survey suggests that young people don't like full stops because they find them too aggressive. A US city has named its sewage plant after John Oliver because they say it's full of shit like he is. And a Brazilian supermarket covered a dead worker's body with umbrellas to keep the store open for 4 hours.
Is it run by Amazon?
No, it's Carrefour. It was Carrefour. They dropped dead of a heart attack, and rather than shut the store or anything, they just put some cardboard boxes around him and some umbrellas over him and just carried on.
Dragged him out by his feet, you know.
What if someone came and got, I need an umbrella.
I need an umbrella.
What a fright.
You know, be attached to a dead man.
You could have had a weekend at Bernie's situation there. Weekend at Carrefour. Like a marionette dead guy. Stacking shelves.
Yeah, I was going to say, stick him with,
earning his money.
Sit him on a chair by the self-checkouts. No one will notice any difference.
Yeah. Security.
Yeah.
They have those cardboard cutouts of coppers these days, don't they? They could have had a... propped him up with some... Anyway, we're not discussing this because it's too short.
They're the simple stories, but they are things that have happened in the last, 2 weeks since we last did a show.
Can I refer back to the KFC bit quickly?
Yeah, of course.
Not discussing the actual story, but something that I read on Reddit yesterday where the definition of a sandwich, right, and this is relevant, definition of a sandwich is a filling in bread, right?
Right.
Thus, a fried chicken wing is a sandwich. Discuss.
Oh.
The chicken wing on its own?
Because it's covered
fried
in bread.
In breadcrumbs, is it therefore a sandwich?
So a fish finger.
No.
Is a fish finger a sandwich?
A fish finger would be a fish sandwich.
So is a fish finger sandwich a fish sandwich sandwich?
It's a meta sandwich.
Isn't it KFC that do the sandwich where instead of two slices of bread, they're two chicken breasts within another chicken breast.
Yeah, they did do that for a while.
So that's effectively a triple decker sandwich then, isn't it?
Mm, a lot of bread.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to put that one out there for everyone to enjoy.
No, absolutely. I like your thinking there. And that's an interesting topic. So our headlines for this week, what we do, we've got five headlines for you. We'll read them all out, then we discard one without discussing it, and then we go through the other four and choose one of them to be our story of the week. So our five headlines this week are: James Blunt's masculine posing led to scurvy. Swiss town coated in cocoa powder after factory glitch. Disney workers fought for the right to have their own underpants. Wedding planner left in stitches after couple's cake request goes horribly wrong. And man uses Bud Light to keep wildfire flames away from California home. And those are our five stories. Which one do you not like the look, the sound of?
I would discard the Budweiser story because it's very much a dog bites man, because Budweiser Light is water and you use water to put fires out.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
JP, are you in agreement with that one?
Yeah, we can get rid of that one. Seems like a waste.
Awesome. There we go.
It's not a waste of Budweiser, because that's about the best thing you can do with it.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, so we will ditch that one. We won't talk about that one. If you want to know about if there is really any more to it than the headline, then keep an eye out on our Twitter feed and website, where I will post the links to all the stories, including that one, and you can read them to your heart's content later. So we'll go through the others. So the first one, the headline came from The Times, and the headline was James Blunt's masculine posing led to scurvy. The Times is obviously subscription-based, so I found the equivalent story on The Independent, so I have got the same story from there, but they have a different headline.
That headline reads like one of those kind of grabby things. Pot A, celebrity. Pot B, they just put it up on the wall. We could do something with that. Let's go.
Yeah. So this story, like I say, the text of this comes from The Independent. It says, James Blunt developed scurvy after eating only meat for 2 months at university. Speaking of Jesse Ware's podcast, Table Manners, Blunt recalled starting his carnivorous diet out of principle when he found himself surrounded by vegan and vegetarian classmates in Bristol in the 90s. 46-year-old musician who was studying aerospace manufacturing, engineering and sociology told Ware, on the sociology side of things, there were 170 girls and only 3 boys, of which all the girls were vegetarians or vegans. So out of principle, I decided to become a carnivore and just lived on mince, some chicken, maybe some mayonnaise. 6 to 8 weeks later, Blunt began to feel the repercussions of the meat-only diet and saw a doctor, who the singer remembers saying, I think you've got the symptoms of scurvy. Scurvy is a disease resulting from the lack of vitamin C and is easily treated by eating fruit and veg. The artist continued, the doctor said you're really lacking in vitamin C, so I took it upon myself to drink orange juice every night, and then I nearly developed acid reflux. There you go.
I mean, who hasn't done stupid shit when they were in their early 20s?
Indeed.
I got married.
So, I mean, that story kind of makes me like James Blunt, which is something we're not supposed to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
his Twitter feed is ace.
His put downs, his cell phones, he is pretty good at it. Yeah. He is one of the top on Twitter for that.
I knew a girl who I did my PGC course with. She claimed the same thing when she was at university. And she was... She's a mother of like 2 now, but when we were doing a PGC, we went out one night drinking, and she's like, she quite a few drinks. She's like, I'll lick any object you point to, and the rest of the night, that's what she did. And we're like, oh, lick the pavement. All right, I'll lick the pavement. All right,
you can do that now.
No. I mean, she's as I said, she's a
not in KFC anyway.
Yeah, lick your own fingers.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, James Blunt also was in the army as well, wasn't he?
He was out of Bosnia. Reckons he's stopped World War III or something by disobeying an order.
Yeah.
Haven't we all?
I did hear a bit of an interview with him recently where he's like really surprised at how many, that the fact that his record company managed to convince people that You're Beautiful is a love song. And have it played at their weddings and stuff when it's quite clearly about a stalker.
Mm. So, well, it's the same with Every Step You Take, isn't it? With the Sting song, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's such a beautiful song. You're like, it's about a stalker. It's about him stalking his now wife.
Yeah. Weird. Musician.
Green Day's Time of Your Life that gets played at weddings and all manner of events now is actually called Good Riddance, brackets Time of Your Life.
Yeah, yeah.
But people don't pay attention to that.
They ignore that bit, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Ah, dear. So that's our first story. We're going to number 2, which is Swiss town coated in cocoa powder after factory glitch. This was in the HuffPost. It says, residents of a Swiss town got a bit of a shock when it started snowing particles of a fine cocoa powder after the ventilation system at a chocolate factory malfunctioned. The Lindt and Sprüngl company confirmed local reports on Tuesday that there was a minor defect in the cooling ventilation for a line for roasted cocoa nibs in its factory in Olten, which is between Zurich and Basel. The nibs, fragments of crushed cocoa beans, are the basis of chocolate. Combined with strong winds on Friday morning, the powder spread around the immediate vicinity of the factory, leaving a fine cocoa dusting. The company says one car was lightly coated and that it had offered to pay for any cleaning needed, but hasn't yet been taken up on the offer. Factory production was able to continue as normal, and the company says the particles were completely harmless to people or the environment. The ventilation system has now been repaired.
There you go. How much would you hate the smell of chocolate if you lived around the smell of chocolate?
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of those things. Like, if you worked in the factory and you were allowed to, as much free chocolate as you want, would how long before you stopped eating chocolate?
That's the
very quickly.
Apocryphal tale of Cadbury's, isn't it? They say, like, on day one to the line operators, take what you want off the line, because they know after like 2-3 hours they're going to be sick. Yeah. I used to live in Banbury, and they had it was like a Kraft had a factory there, and they made instant coffee, and they would every so often vent air into the atmosphere, and the town would reek of burnt coffee. Absolutely horrible.
Yeah. I went to university in Warrington, where there was both a sugar factory and the Persil factory. So at various times of day in different parts of the city, all you smelt was either sugarcane or detergent. And sugarcane is not really a particularly pleasant smell.
Burnt sugar, isn't it? It's not particularly nice.
No, it's not.
Meanwhile, I went to uni in Bournemouth, and all you can smell there is old folks and dirty students.
Yeah. Well, Switzerland's the land of chocolate.
Of chocolate. And we've got JP here who doesn't... Are you still not eating chocolate? I remember when we first met, I was surprised at the fact that you don't eat chocolate.
No, I'm not that fast. Finn likes mint chocolate. I eat a bit of mint chocolate with him. But
yeah, whereas I just can't get enough of the stuff. I mean, I'm sat here, I've got little chocolate bars around me.
I have to force myself to not eat sugary foods for months at a time. And through that, I've lost like 30 kilos over the last few years. Because I'll just eat. I'll spend £1 on one of the big bars of Cadbury's and just nom it in the car while I'm driving somewhere.
Yeah.
In like half an hour.
Yeah.
I'm terrible for it.
Same. Yeah. Same. And I tend to eat more when I'm out, and then obviously hide the evidence from the wife.
It's not just me.
No, my dad does it too.
I imagine every man listening to this has gone,
yeah.
Holy crap. I've always called it shame eating, but now I realise it's just
normal. It's just what we do.
It's just being human.
Yeah. It is shame eating, for sure. You're like, I'm getting away with this.
Yeah.
You're like, bank up. It'll never happen.
I'm not alone.
No, you're not alone, absolutely. There'll be lots of other people listening to this and watching this who are in the same boat as well. Don't you worry. We'll form a group. Story number three is about Disney workers who fought for the right to have their own underpants. This story is in Cracked. It says, despite looking the part, working for a costumed character at a Disney theme park is anything but magical. From draconic body rules to never being allowed to break character, not even if some divorced dad's hand starts sliding towards your Tinkerbell, these employees sacrifice all of their individuality for $11 an hour. And if that sounds somewhat dramatic, remember that until recently, these contract employees of the Magic Kingdom weren't even allowed to choose which magic underpants to wear. Official Disney costumes are expensive and tightly tailored. They also don't sync well with off-the-rack clothing, as medieval fantasy ball gowns are wont to do. So to prevent any awkward bunching or bulging of underwear, a hint of humanity trapped inside a Goofy mascot, performers are required to wear Disney-issued jockstraps, tights or cycling shorts. And like all other parts of their costume, this Disney-issued underwear isn't owned by the performers. Instead, they were given a random pair of panties at the start of their shift. Surprisingly, many costume workers didn't like wearing jock straps that one of their colleagues was wearing whilst dancing around under California, Florida sun the day before, especially since the communal underwear was often dirty and stained. This despite Disney representatives promising that these were regularly washed with hot water, which is undoubtedly all you need to get rid of 8 hours' worth of ball sweat from a guy in a 40-pound Chippendale costume. By 2001, and after several outbreaks of pubic lice, the Disney performers had their public panties in such a bunch that the unions had to get involved. It took 2 months of intense negotiations by the Tea Masters Union before the corporation agreed to the demand of getting each employee their own pair of underpants. A great victory of workers' rights in the 21st century.
Do you reckon in the Japanese Disney they actually sell them?
Undoubtedly. Well,
in a vending machine.
To Westerners.
Well... Being the vending machines out there or something.
Oh, yeah.
To play devil's advocate to Disney, it's a really good way of wheedling out anybody who might be pleased at sharing underwear, because you don't want that person working at Disneyland.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the thing about that, of course, as well, is like, what if someone had an STI unknowingly, and that gets shared around, then you're going to have an outbreak of that. Mm. And that's not really good either. I mean, it's just on a health basis, this is a bad idea, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think Disney gives a shit.
A friend of mine used to work at Disney. She flew over there and worked there for a year. And now they found an apartment, put her up in an apartment, and they put a bus on to take you to and from the park every day. Of course, you have to pay for that bus and you have to pay for that apartment. They find it for you. They tell you how much it is and you have to pay it. So it is a very strict place to work from what I remember the stories.
I'd last about 6 hours working at Disney, if that.
Bearing in mind all Disney's political leanings, as we know, being a strict organization is not necessarily something that would be a surprise.
Yeah, I guess.
I believe Walt himself, not a fan of the Jew.
He certainly was not, no.
No. Anyway.
Anyway. Yeah.
Anti-Semitism aside, Disney is a wonderful place. Oh, they've got their own pants now.
They got their own pants. They're all numbered, but they've got their own pants.
Lucky people.
Anyway, we'll move on to the next story.
Wait, are they numbered like, you know, like England cricket, they've got like a cap number.
Yeah, they've got a cup number.
Do you reckon they've gone back retrospectively and awarded the numbers as well? This old lad, yeah, like, you weren't there in the 50s, you get to knock on the door one day with a presentation pack. Here's your number.
Here's your retirement G-string.
Well,
there we go.
He's gone. What place is this podcast goes?
This goes all over the place.
Right at the crack of the news.
I did make me laugh when you said it. The story was in cracked as well.
That's I hadn't even twigged that one. Nice. Now, this next story is from The Mirror. No relation to the story. Wedding planner left in stitches after couple's cake request goes horribly wrong. It says, you know, we've seen some disastrous baking fails as of late. The gender reveal cake, which accidentally showcased the gender on the top of the cake instead of inside, and the celebratory bake that was compared to burnt cow flesh. There's another one doing the rounds now, which is sure to make you giggle, it says. Well, let's see. The cake in question was intended for a wedding, and a photo of it was shared online by a wedding planner who, after spotting the mistake, urged people to save the baking for professionals. Picture was uploaded to Reddit's Facepalm forum with the caption, "This is why you hire professionals. This cake was supposed to spell Wiser Wedding, W-I-S-E-R. It's obviously the surname of the people getting married. So Wiser Wedding. This will be their wedding horror story for sure. Instead of getting a professional cake maker to whip up the sweet treat for their big day, the couple had given their local supermarket to ice the cake for them. However, the message on the top ended up being very different from what they asked for. The pair wanted the wording on top in white frosting to read Wiser Wedding. But instead it said, Why is there a wedding? In bright green lettering. The post went viral on Reddit with a number of people commented on the baking fail. It made lists of the comments, but that's the gist of it. Instead of saying why is it, I don't know why you just get the name on the cake anyway. If you're at the wedding, you should know whose wedding it is. You don't need it spelled out on a cake. Why is a wedding? But yeah, why is there a wedding is what it actually said.
I just think it just shows a lack of imagination on that couple's, you know, part, really, isn't it? I mean, come on, think of something better than that.
I suppose it depends, because if at the minute it doesn't say where this was. So if it was in the UK, obviously at the moment, the rules about weddings are you can only have 30 people, you're not really allowed a reception. So why would you go to the expense of having a ridiculously expensive professional cake when you can't have people around? Why not just spend 20 quid on one from the supermarket? Seems fair enough.
Yeah. On the other hand, though, it does show off a remarkable amount of narcissism, putting your own name on your wedding cake and not just having the little bride and groom like you're supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the law.
We've got the little, yeah, we've still got ours downstairs on a shelf, little wooden
ones.
Yeah,
we've got ours. Ours were crocheted by a friend.
Oh, nice.
And shipped over from Australia where she lives, and they ended up costing us like £35 because we had to pay customs on
them. Ours are,
but we've still got them on a shelf.
Mine is me opening my shirt to reveal the Spider-Man costume that I've got underneath, which is what we did. We did one of those superhero poses we did on our photos. I had Spider-Man. My dad had a Superman t-shirt on. My brother was Cap. Ed was Batman. Andy was Iron Man. Father-in-law was the Flash. And there's just photos of all of us ripping our wedding gear open to reveal our...
Hang on. I'm just going back with... They're all Marvel characters except for your father-in-law. Am I right in saying that?
No, there was we had the Flash, Superman, and Batman.
Oh, okay.
Cap, Iron Man, Spider-Man.
I saw a conspiracy there, which didn't actually exist.
So that's a crappy wedding cake, basically, is the third story.
Hey, he pays your money, he takes your choice.
No, that is the fourth story, because then the last story is the Bud Light story, which we're not going to talk about.
Is that?
Yeah, no, there's no story. There's no story there. So the four that we discussed, which we've now got to whittle down to our story of the week, were, just to recap, James Blunt's masculine posing, which led to scurvy, the Swiss town that got coated in cocoa powder, Disney workers' right to have their own underpants, and the wedding planner whose cake went horribly wrong. So anyone we particularly like out of those four?
I'm inclined to go for the chocolate powder, cocoa powder story. I like that one.
Okay. JP, what are your thoughts?
Probably have to go for the chocolate powder.
You're going for chocolate as well? Oh, okay. Lloyd, what about you?
I was going to go for Disney, but obviously going to be outvoted on that one anyway.
Yeah, I could have quite got behind Disney as well myself. But okay, it looks like the Swiss town coated in cocoa powder is our story of the week. So there we go. Thank you very much. Like I said, I will post the links to all five stories on Twitter and on the website later. The website is albear.uk/DPS for Dead Piet Society. And it'll all be there. We're not doing the votes anymore because basically maximum of two people were voting on the polls, so it didn't seem
worth. You were one and Kitty was the other.
Well, I noticed last time JP was one because the vote came in at exactly the same time as he retweeted it, which was a bit of a giveaway, and I'm pretty sure Kitty was the other one. So I haven't bothered last time or this. So that is our new story of the week, so we'll do the same again next week.
I'm an inquisitive kid. When I thought my dad was having an affair, I decided to record my investigation. This is a diary of a nosy little shit, brought to you by Plunderbox. Writing. Welcome to the show. My name's Cilla Black. I sound a bit odd because I've got a cold. Go ahead, love. Introduce yourself.
My name is Fanny, Female Archive Notebook Network Internet Engine. I am looking for someone with at least 5 gigabytes of hard drive space and 64 megabytes of RAM.
Ladies and gentlemen, Fanny. Now Fanny has to choose between these three hunky guys. Go ahead, guys, introduce yourself. Contestant number one.
Dibby.
Contestant number two. Contestant number three.
I am Mark, the RAM Armenia Archive Research Computer. We have a potential listenership of 800,000.
That's brilliant.
I said potential. We have an actual listenership of 3.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark.
Question number one. I have a system error. Abort, retry, fail, or ignore. And that is to contestant number one.
Dibby.
Contestant number two. Contestant number three.
Wow, baby. You are making my drive hard. It would have to be retry, because I never ignore a woman, and I never fail.
Question number two for contestant number one. I have excellent networking capabilities. What would you do to take full advantage of this?
Dibby.
Contestant number three.
Well, my little Fanny, I would definitely like to sit on your inner face. I am renowned for my networking. I once connected to 2 computers at once.
Contestant number two. Final question. My system resources are running dangerously low. What would you do to help? Number three.
Well, I would offer some advice. Forget your memory and internet, your floppy disks too. Because I would do most anything to get into bed with you.
Number one.
Dibby.
Number two.
Well, now our Fanny has a difficult decision to make. Let's go over to our Graham.
So, Fanny, will it be contestant number one, a tweaky little fellow with a big heart? Or will it be contestant number two, a space cadet who wants you as his Princess Leia? Or will it be contestant number three, whose big hard drive is sure to win over your Ethernet connection? Honey, the choice is yours.
Well, Silla, I think that I will have to go with number three.
Who's your daddy?
The best wrestling promotion that you've never seen. Tonight's main event is the one we've all been waiting for. It's the Betamax Kid versus the asshole, Amos Banks.
The show is coming to a close. Our time channel hopping through podcasts is up for another week. If you've listened all the way through, then thank you very much. Please do hit that subscribe button. Make sure you don't miss any future episodes. And if you have a spare minute, please do give us a rating and a review on whatever podcast system you're listening to us on. You'll be doing us a big favour. If you particularly liked the weird week that was, you can find the Dead Piet Society live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. BST on getvocal.com. That's V-O-K-L. Or seek out Dead Piet Sock on Facebook, Twitter, or Periscope. Don't forget to check out our guest podcast, Stacey's Pop Culture Parlor, on your podcast platform of choice. And find Stacey on Twitter at Stacey's Parlor. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all the social medias at OwlBearUK. And you can send us any emails to bearcave@owlbear.uk. Until next time, peace out.
The Bear Cave and Other Podcasts is written, produced and presented by Alan Galpin. Guests include Stacey Taylor, Darren Saunders, John Paul O'Hare and Lloyd Collins, with additional performances from Matt Lees and Rob Grams. Theme music is One Shot by Hook Sounds. News theme by Fabio Music. Other music from Adam Witofsky and Anna Managuchi, used under Creative Commons license. I find that answer vague and unconvincing.